Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're focusing on Perek Zion, the seventh Perek of Melachim Beis. And before we start the Perek, I want to just put a question out there, which I'd like to come back at the end of the recording, so you have a few minutes to think this over, and that is, which Haftorah is today's Perek? Where do we read this Haftorah? And clue, it is coming soon for those who are in the first round and cycle of Nach Yomi. Okay, so let's start. This is the section, which is the title of this section is called the Arba Mitzaraim, the four lepers. Let's try to understand what's going on over here. Just recontextualization, just to put ourselves back into context. There's been a tremendous famine because of the siege of Aram on Israel, in the Northern Kingdom. It reached such terrible levels of depravity that people were eating their children. King of Israel, Jehoram, got very angry in his despair with Elisha for not having protected the people or having fended off those from Aram. And in doing so, he demanded the death of Elisha. We last left off where the messenger had arrived at Elisha, and when the messenger arrives there, we didn't focus on this so much at the end last time, but he says, "Vayomer hine zois hara me'es Hashem ha'ochil la'Hashem od." He says, this evil that's happened over here is clearly from Hashem. What else could I possibly do? Meaning to say, he understands that if he were to kill Elisha, it would be a worse thing, and he desists. So, at this point in time, Elisha now reveals to him his prediction, and he says, "Ka'es machar, at this time tomorrow, sa'ah b'soles b'shekel v'sa'asayim sa'arim b'shekel b'shar shamron." Everything is going to be tomorrow. It's going to suddenly become a extremely, extremely cheap. Meaning to say, there's going to be so much food, the prices are going to tumble in terms of the cost of food. Interesting. And the Shalish turns to him, this messenger who was supposed to kill him, turns around and says, "Hine Hashem oseh arbos ha-shamayim ha-yeh kadavar hazeh." God can really do that. I mean, like, okay, give us a little food, but to be such a dramatic turnaround, that's not possible. Elisha's response is, "Hinecha ro'eh be'enecha, misham lo tochal." You're going to see this happen, but you ain't going to be eating from it, son. You're not going to be getting partaking from this. So just, it sounds like it was a little bit of a punishment that he got for questioning Elisha. And one thing which is worthwhile noting over here before going further is that there is a debate in the Mefarshim as to what really happened to the messenger. The one line of the Mefarshim, like the Ralbag, would say that, no, the messenger arrived, and when he arrived at Elisha, he realized that killing Elisha is not a good idea, and he turned around, and now Elisha gave him this prophecy. But there are other Mefarshim, like the Metzoras Tzion, like the Chidah, like many of the others, who suggest that what's really going on over here is that the messenger arrives, desists from killing him, and the king follows because nothing happens, meaning Jehoram himself comes to the party. And that's when Elisha tells the king himself this question, this operation. And that means to say that there's actually an audience of two here. We have to think about how that affects and impacts the rest of the Perek. Okay, so let's go a little further. So what ends up happening? There happen to be four men who are Mitzaraim, that are suffering from leprosy. They are outside the camp, right? So they're outside the walls of the siege, clearly, because they're not allowed in the city. And they're starving to death. There's nothing to eat. And they said, "We're either going to starve to death waiting outside the city walls, or we'll go to the camp of Aram. Maybe they'll have mercy on us, maybe they won't, but either way we're dead, so what do we have to lose?" They go off to the camp of Aram, but it happens to be that the previous night, Hashem had orchestrated a miracle, that the whole camp, which was laying siege to the whole area of Israel, heard a terrifying noise, as if they were being attacked by horses, as if they were being attacked by various other armies. Clearly this was all an illusion, which Hashem was orchestrating, but nonetheless they all fled, leaving everything in the camp open and left over. So they come in and they see that there's only like livestock, there's only donkeys and horses around, and all the food is sort of, the fridge is left open kind of thing. There's nothing, and they didn't take anything with them. So once they see this, they're like, this is like kids in a toy shop. They immediately go and, they start eating everything they possibly can. They drink and they take gold and silver and they take them and they hide them. And at a certain point, they realize, this is not really right. We really should tell the other folks, because otherwise the matzanu oven, we're going to be found to be bad. What the proportion point out, the Ralbag points out, is they realize that if they are not going to tell everybody else, that other people die because die of famine while not finding out, and they find out a day or two later, they're going to be implicated. So, of course, in self-protection mechanism, they're going to now tell everybody else. Okay, so they off they go, and they tell the guard at the gate that this is the situation. But when the king hears of this, the particular situation, he's not so keen on this. He thinks this is maybe a trap. Maybe these people from Aram are hiding in the field. They're waiting for them to come out, and then they're going to attack. So he sends off, you know, messenger scouts to see, and behold, the whole army of Aram has retreated to the river, and they left everything scattered as they went, dropping everything to escape. They were so terrified of this illusory battle that was following them. So they off they run, and they report this, and everybody, it realizes that there's food out there. The king sends this messenger, who is this original messenger, to stand by the gate, and every pours out of the gate because they know there's food. They haven't eaten for so long, and as they pour out, they trample this poor messenger to death, and he does not able to eat, and he's not able to eat of the food. And this, in fact, the Tanakh emphasizes that this is exactly what Elisha had prophesied. Number one is that there would be food available, and there would be so much food that the prices would drop immediately. And number two is that the person who was the shalish, this messenger, would in fact die, would not see it, and never he was trampled to death in this at this point. So a few things to think about, points to ponder on the perek as a whole. Let's close the perek. It's a pretty short perek comparatively to what we've been doing up till now. You know, why is it so severe that he dies? So taking the line that the king was actually in the audience of Elisha at this point in time, and it was the king and the messenger, if the fact that the messenger interrupted Elisha to question Elisha's prophecy, then in a certain sense he's sowing doubt in the king's perception, which is worth which is a huge crime, which is why Elisha gives him this particular curse. But on a bigger perspective over here, when looking at why is that these folks, these lepers, actually told, who are these lepers, first of all? Where did these four Mitzrayim come from? So the Chazal tell us that these four Mitzrayim were Gehazi. Remember, Gehazi was stricken with leprosy, and his children, his three sons. His whole family was struck with leprosy, and that's who they were. So they weren't particularly good people necessarily. The Malbim points out in lieu of that, maybe that is why they felt bad, and they needed to tell the city that the food was out there, because he had already fallen prey to the idea of taking extra money that wasn't his. So he was more sensitive to it second time around when it came to this moment, and he was instead of taking the gold and silver from Naaman, the general, now he was more careful about making sure that everybody else found out about this. The Malbim adds in one extra wrinkle, which is really a very interesting point over here, that adds to the culpability of this messenger, and that is that why was he sent to the gate? It wasn't that he was taking tickets. What the Malbim points out is that Yehoram realized that this is an opportunity. Whenever there's demand, that's something you can regulate and you can charge for. So you know what Yehoram did? The king said, well, I'm going to send my tax collector, my messenger, to the gate, and he's going to prevent people from going out so that we can lay claim to all the food and all the gold, and we'll tax people for it. That way, first of all, the regulation is going to now bring back money into the king's coffers. And number two is that it's also going to undermine Elisha's prophecy, because Elisha said that prices will tumble because of the amount of food. Well, the prices aren't going to tumble because I'm going to regulate it. So while he was standing there, he couldn't hold back the force, the simple multitude of people who had just desperately needed to eat. And therefore, he was killed in actually being a hindrance to the prophecy of Elisha, which adds another level of culpability. That's the perek. One last idea, which is an extremely profound idea, and that is, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has a beautiful book called Logic of the Mind, Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind, well worth reading. And in it, he has an essay on Eretz Yisrael, Yom HaAtzma'ut, which of course is very much timely to this particular time of year that we're learning right now, first time around. And that is that there are many who claim that we can't possibly celebrate the state of Israel because the people who founded it were simply not good people. They were people, how could Yeshua, how could salvation come through people who were not just apathetic to religion, but had animosity to religion, who hated religion, who undermined religion? How can we celebrate something which came in the hands of such difficult and sometimes disgraceful people? So the Rav Soloveitchik points out that if you look in history, if you look in Tanakh, and he gives numerous examples, you see that redemption often does come heralded through people who aren't necessarily fitting. Example being our case as one of them. How was it that the salvation came? How is it that the people got to eat? There were people probably dying of starvation at this point in time. Every last minute mattered. How did they know how were they saved? Did they know that in fact the food was right outside the walls and that the enemy had left? Well, it was through these four Mitzrayim. They weren't respectable people. Gehazi was, the Midrash talks about that. The Pesukim are clear about Gehazi's infringements, and there's more. So clearly over here, we take Hashem's Yeshua and we thank Hashem for his salvation. It doesn't matter to us who or where it came from. It's ultimately Hashem's Yeshua. That's what the other Rav Soloveitchik says in pointing out why our perspective, the state of Israel. And finally, just to close, this is of course the Haftarah of Parashas Metzora, connected to the Arba Metzoraim, which we're going to be learning next week, which is why it's very timely and always is as it comes to Nach. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.